Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the final installment of our three-part series discussing what happens when Shabbat and Rosh Hashanah coincide. And what I have been struck by this entire time is the very simple fact, as I already begin to share the source sheet this very moment, the fact described by the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah Shechal Liot B'Shabbat, when Rosh Hashanah coincides with Shabbat, B'Amikdash Hayutokim, they would still blow shofar in the Beit HaMikdash in the temple, Aval Lo B'Medina, but not in the rest of the country. And this is something that I've been obsessed with and continue to be obsessed with. I will also be talking about it on Rosh Hashanah itself. The fact that we have a focal mitzvah, a Torah command to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and yet we just don't do it when it coincides with Shabbat. This is striking. And what we have been searching for are explanations and understandings of this prohibition that provide us with new meanings to Rosh Hashanah, that allow us to think a little bit more about specifically Rosh Hashanah that falls on Shabbat, how we consider it differently in the absence of the shofar. And what we have focused on until now is a debate between the Bavli, the Gemara itself, the Babylonian Talmud, and the Yerushalmi. I don't have on the source sheet today the Yerushalmi. We're not going to be talking about the Yerushalmi. We've been a little bit more focused and obsessed with the Yerushalmi until now. The Yerushalmi, as we saw for the past couple of weeks, and we really spoke about it last week at length, the Yerushalmi presents blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah almost as an absolute prohibition. Woven into the very fabric of the command of Rosh Hashanah, we don't just have Yom Teruah, the day of blowing shofar, but also Zichron Teruah, the remembrance of the shofar. And therefore, per the Yerushalmi, you just don't. You just don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. And to a certain extent, as difficult as that is to process, to a certain extent, it makes a lot of sense. There's Rosh Hashanah version A, and there's Rosh Hashanah version B. Rosh Hashanah version A in the Torah is a regular Rosh Hashanah. You blow shofar. Rosh Hashanah version B is also a legitimate version of Rosh Hashanah in the Torah. You just don't blow shofar because it coincides with Shabbat. However, what we've also touched on, but not really dwelt on to any degree, is the curious reason provided by the Bavli. So the Bavli, at first, the Gemara does suggest, potentially, this Torah prohibition might exist. Yom Teruah, Zichron Teruah, it suggests and rejects. The Gemara asks, Minahani Mili, from where do we derive the principle, the prohibition of blowing shofar on Shabbat? And so what's in the ellipses are all of these different suggestions, which include essentially the same suggestion made by the Yerushalmi. However, then the Gemara says the following in source number two after the ellipses, Ella Amar Rava. No, Rava offers his own answer. Mid the Oraita Mishrei Share. Now, it is completely permitted according to the Torah to blow shofar on Shabbat. The Rabbanan who digzorbe. Kid the rabbi, and it was the rabbis who decreed that we don't blow shofar on Shabbat in accordance with the opinion of the great sage Rabba, the Amar Rabba, for he said, "Kol chayavin b'tkiat shofar." The problem is the following. Everyone is obligated to blow shofar, but ve'ein hakol b'ki'in b'tkiat shofar. Not everyone knows how to blow shofar, not everyone's an expert. Thus, we find a problem on Shabbat. Gezeira shema yitlenu biyado. They instituted a decree lest to prevent one from picking up the shofar in their hand. V'yelech etzal habaki nilmad, traveling over, walking over to an expert in order to learn how to blow shofar. Vaya avirenu arba amot birushut harabim, thus carrying four cubits in the public domain, violating the malacha of hotza'a, the prohibition of carrying between two different domains. One of the malachot of Shabbat, one of the prohibited activities of Shabbat, v'hainu taima delulav, v'hainu taima de megillah. This is the same rationale given as to why we don't bring our Arba Minim, and it's the same rationale on Sukkot, and it's the same rationale why we don't read the Megillah on Purim. The reason we aren't blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah, despite the Yerushalmi, the reality is, we tend to always advocate, the answer always given is, this answer of the Bavli. As a general rule, when the Bavli and Yerushalmi have a debate about a topic, we always follow the Bavli. We only pick up the Yerushalmi if the Bavli says nothing about it. But here, the Bavli gives us a clear reason as to why we won't blow shofar on Shabbat. It's a gezeira. It's a decree, lest one carry. their shofar on Shabbat and violate the malacha of Hotza'ah. I mentioned this a little bit in the first week, but this is, at first glance, a little bit bizarre. When you think of how many different things need to go wrong in order for this to happen. So first of all, the obvious one, that there can't be an Erev, fine. But you have to be wanting to blow shofar, not knowing how to blow shofar, wanting to go walk over to someone who will teach you how to blow shofar with your own shofar in your hand. And in doing so, you're going to violate the malacha of Hotza'ah. What on earth are we doing? Why are we coming up with this hyper-convoluted concern of violating the malacha of Hotza'ah on Shabbat in order to leave ourselves with a situation where we just don't get to fulfill the true mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah when it coincides with Shabbat? And I'm not sure how good of an analogy this is, but the first one that leapt to my mind is Brit Milah. So there's one school of thought given by the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat that when, so Brit Milah, right, to cut skin is prohibited also on Shabbat. And yet we perform a Brit Milah on Shabbat. One school of thought is there's something unique and special about Brit Milah. Fine, that it uniquely is allowed to override Shabbat. But there is another school of thought also within the Gemara that simply because you have to perform a Brit Milah on the eighth day, and if the eighth day is statistically, there's a likelihood it's going to fall on Shabbat. So fine, you have to still do a Brit Milah on the eighth day. The reality is the Torah still says, you know, blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. And statistically, Rosh Hashanah is going to coincide with Shabbat. Why don't we just play the same rule here? Why don't we say the very fact that the Torah commands us to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and that sometimes Rosh Hashanah will coincide with Shabbat, shofar should override Shabbat? I wonder how much of that is going into Rava's point that, like, technically speaking, there isn't a problem with blowing shofar on Shabbat. And yet we outlaw shofar on Shabbat. We throw away the key core mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah in order to avoid the potential violation of a malacha of Hotza'ah. In and of itself, it seems absolutely ridiculous. The question actually gets even stronger when we drill a little deeper into the malacha of Hotza'ah, the prohibition of carrying. Because as we will see, of all the prohibitions of Shabbat, the one that should be in many ways the least important, the least significant, is Hotza'ah. And yet, the very fact that we are prohibiting shofar on Shabbat out of deference to the most minimal of all the malachot of Shabbat only amplifies our question. And to understand the inferiority of Hotza'ah, the prohibition of carrying, we need to look at a few different comments by the Ba'alei HaTosafot, but to appreciate their questions, we first need to just make a couple of observations. The first is in source number 3. We're not going to read the whole of source number 3. Source number 3 is the laundry list of the 39 malachot. It begins, Avot malachot arba'im chasar achat, right? There are 40 minus 1 prohibited activities on Shabbat. And I bolded at the very, very end of this Mishnah, what's the final of the 39 melachot? Hamotzi merashut lirashut, carrying from one domain to another. In the list of melachot, Hotza'ah, carrying, is the final one of the list. If I were to ask you, if you were writing a book on the laws of Shabbat, and you wanted to choose a logical order to discuss the malachot of Shabbat, where would you place the prohibition of carrying? Ostensibly, you would place it at the end, because that is the 39th of the 39 malachot. And yet, if we look at the very, very first Mishnah of Masechet Shabbat, long before we even get the list of Malachot, we read the following, and I should stress this Mishnah is very It's not the easiest Mishnah in the world to process and fund, and I've only done a tiny bit of it because it's actually a really, really, really long Mishnah. But for our purposes, we only need to focus on the beginning. The very first Mishnah of Masechet Shabbat. Shabbat opens with the following. Yitziat HaShabbat, the prohibition of carrying on Shabbat, Shtayim, Shehein Arba Bifnim, Ushtayim Shehein Arba Bachutz. It involves two different possible prohibitions, which are actually four concerning someone on an inside, and two which are actually four prohibitions concerning someone standing on the outside. Then the Mishnah asks, Ketzad, how is this so? And it goes through all the possible permutations, of which only a couple of them are included in this Mishnah. He'ani omeid b'chutz, a poor person stands on the outside. Uva'al habayit bifnim, and the homeowner stands on the inside of their home. Hashat he'ani et yado lifnim. If the poor person puts their hand from the outside into the inside of the homeowner's home, v'natan l'toch yado, and places something into the homeowner's hand, yado shel ba'al habayit, or shenatal mitocho v'hotzi, or takes something from the homeowner's home and withdraws it, he'ani chayav uva'al habayit pator, the poor person is liable, has broken Shabbat, and the owner of the house is exempt. The details don't really matter for us. We'll come to a few of the details, will be relevant for our purposes. Most crucially for us, it's worth just stressing, despite the fact that it is the 39th of 39 Melachot of Shabbat, it is the very first discussion of Masechet Shabbat. And the truth is, there's an entire additional tractate of Mishnah and Gemara that discusses nuances to fundamentally the malacha of hotza'ah, the prohibition of carrying a ruvin. And around a third of the Shulchan Aruch's entire discussion of Shabbat is taken up by hotza'ah. Hotza'ah, the prohibition of carrying, despite the fact that it's last on the list, has an outsized influence over the actual discussions of Hilchot Shabbat. And with this in mind, a few comments of Tosafot are worth noting. So the Baalei HaTosafot, which is an entire school of thought stretching medieval France and Germany, who had a completely different approach to learning Gemara than many people before them, they note the following. Hiksha Riva. So they quote, first of all, one of their number, Riva, who is bothered by the fact that Didine Hotza'ot Shabbat Hayulo Lishnot Gabe Avot Melachot Achar Perek Klal Gadol Lekama. Surely, the law, and this is, I should stress, they are commenting on the opening mission to Masechet Shabbat, and they quote Riva's problem. Surely, if we're going to talk about the laws of carrying on Shabbat, it should be listed along with all the other malachot. It should wait until after the second Mishnah of the seventh chapter, when it's actually raised. Dahatam, because there, Ketani Avot Malachot Arba'im Chasar Achat, it teaches there are 40 malachot minus one. V'ketani hotza'a libasov, and the final one it lists is hotza'a. We should talk about hotza'a then. We shouldn't open the entire discussion with hotza'a, carrying. We should wait until later on, so they give a whole bunch of explanations. But their final one is the following. Hotza'a hutzrich lishnot tefei. It was incredibly important to stress from the very beginning the malacha of hotza'ah. There was a reason the Gemara, the Mishnah, want to start with hotza'ah. They want to start us off by discussing the prohibition of carrying. Mishum de malacha guru'ahi. Because it is a weak malacha. A lackluster malacha. An insignificant, an inferior malacha. Guru'ah means something to that effect. Kamosha Afresha, as will be explained. In other words, and this happens in a variety of places in our Jewish lives, where something that's actually insignificant has slightly more emphasis placed on it so people don't dismiss it. So again, we're not going to focus right now on what Malacha Guru'a means exactly. We'll get to it shortly. But Tosafot answer by drawing attention to their fundamental belief that the prohibition of hotza'ah, of carrying, is a malacha guru'ah, a weak, an inferior, a lackluster malacha. This same idea is found in another comment of Tosafot. So Tosafot continue being bothered And you will have noticed in that Mishnah, right? The Mishnah is teaching multiple versions of the same case involving a poor person and a homeowner. Why such kind of strange, interesting examples being brought? Why so many different nuances to the cases? That's source 5a. Tema Luri, right? The Ri, another one of the great members of the Baalei HaTosfot, was struck by the fact, Emai Tzarech Lematne Tarte Da'ani Udaba'al Habayit. Why do we need to teach two cases involving both a poor person and a homeowner? So, and we're going to see this comment repeated a little bit in one of the next sources, because Tosfos sometimes copied and slightly reworded their ideas, but we'll already just translate it now, and then we'll dwell on it a little bit soon. V'nir Elori. So the Ri explained the following. De'itzdrich la'ashme'inan. The Mishnah needed to teach all of this kind of hyper-convoluted framing for the Mishnah. Mishum da'hotza'a. Malacha Guruahi, because fundamentally, Hotza'a carrying is a lackluster Malacha. The Mali Motzi Mirushot Hayachid Lirushot Harabim. Mali Motzi Mirushot Hayachid Lirushot Hayachid. What is the difference? Why should it matter? If you're carrying from a private domain to a public domain, which is a biblical prohibition, or if you're carrying from a private domain to another private domain, which is only rabbinically prohibited. Velo Have Amrinan. Gamrinan hotza'a da'ani mi ba'al habayit, v'lo ba'al habayit me'ani. Also, we'd be unable to, if we only had the cases of a poor person, we'd be able to derive nothing regarding a homeowner and vice versa. V'teida me'itzrich trei cry b'hotza'a. And this was also why, this occurs later in the Gemara in Masachet Shabbat. Chazal don't just find one verse to prove the prohibition of carrying, they find two. Right, they need two for two cases for two different people, but also because it's such a weak malacha, Chazal felt compelled to double down on the fact that hotza'a was prohibited. V'hainu mishum the malacha guruahi, because it's a weak malacha, itzrich travaihu. We needed two different verses, chad la'ani v'chad la'asher. Right, it's so weak. We need extra help in constructing this prohibition of carrying. And similarly, just once again, and what I want to draw your attention to, by the way, if this is not kind of obvious, right, this is not just a one-off comment by Tosafot, this is a fundamental thesis of the Ba'alei HaTosafot about the Malacha of Hotza'a. This is a fundamental view of their entire school regarding the prohibition of carrying. In source number 6, it's from Masechet Shavuot. Shavuot is not about the festival of Shavuot, but it's about oaths. And the Mishnah in Shavuot opens with a similar literary structure to Masechet Shabbat. And thus the Gemara starts talking about the first Mishnah of Masechet Shabbat, which leads to many, many commentators also discussing the prohibition of carrying on the opening pages of Masechet Shavuot, which is why Tosfot are also bringing this here. And once again they say, Rabbeinu Tam Mefarish. Rabbeinu Tam explains the Hotza'a Malacha Guruahi. The Hotza'a is a Malacha Gurua. The Mali im Motzi Marashut Hayachid Lirashut Hayachid Umali Lirashut Harabim. What difference does it make whether we're moving from one domain to another, or two kind of similar private domains, the different levels of prohibition? Lekach chutzrech lefaresh kol inyonim da'ani va'asher. Therefore, it was necessary to teach all of these possible situations involving a poor person and an owner. What emerges from Tosafot's doubling down on this idea of malacha gurua, and this is something that is going to become clearer and clearer and clearer as we look at a few different other additional explanations as to why it's a malacha gurua. The prohibition of Hotza'a, right? What do they keep on emphasizing over and over again? What makes it Malacha Gerua is being Motzi Mirashut Lirashut. This will make more sense soon. All the other Malachot are object-orientated or oriented. Not so Hotza'a. Hotza'ah is all about domains. Hotza'ah is all about shifting domains, and that is it. How exactly to better understand this? We have to turn to a different commentator, and that is the Rashba, Rabbi Shlomo Ibn Aderet, who lived in the 13th century in Spain. And he writes the following. In explaining Hotza'ah, he says, Shehi Malacha Gurua, at this point we are familiar with this term, right? He too is doubling, is noting this fact. It's a weak, lackluster Malacha. He explains why. She'i, and this is kind of a classic, sometimes what we think of as classic complaints about some of our things on Shabbat, we fail to recognize were already argued and articulated by early commentators. So Rashba writes the following. She'ilu pina mazvit, mizavit lezavit, masa gadol pator. If you move a heavy object from one corner of your house to another, you are exempt. You've not fundamentally violated the prohibition of Hotza'ah. V'chotzi ktsat minei mirashut l'rashut. But if you take a tiny object from one rashut to another, from a private domain to a public domain, hayav, you have violated Shabbat. Masha'ein kein b'sha'a kol malachot. This is not the case regarding all the other malachot. She'enan asurot ella, they are only prohibited when it comes to mitzad atzman, themselves, be'eza reshut she'ta'aseh. The fundamental way you violate Shabbat, it does not matter what domain you are in, it's all about the object. Here, says Rashba, absolutely nothing to do with the object. And you want to know why? Says Rashba, imagine the following. You decide you want to rearrange the furniture in your living room on a Shabbat. So there might be other halachic reasons I should stress to not do so on Shabbat. But at least when it comes to the prohibition of Hotza'ah, of carrying, you've not violated Hotza'ah by lifting an incredibly heavy couch and exerting yourself just to shift the couch around the room. In contrast, if you pick up a tiny pin, an earring, and you take that tiny, effortless to carry pin, and there's no Erev, and you leave your Rashut Hayachid, your private home, and you enter the Rashut Harabim, you enter the public thoroughfare, despite the fact that no exertion took place, despite the fact that it was effortless, you violated Shabbat. It's not about the object. The object has no influence whatsoever on the violation. It is all about the shifting of domains. And a different struggle, and the final struggle I want to draw your attention to with the Malacha of Hotza'ah, is articulated by the Or Zeruah, who is one of the school of Tosavot. He is Rabbi Yitzchak ben Moshe of Vienna, again lived in the 13th century. And in his Hilchot Shabbat, he writes the following. V'hamotzi lekaman beperik, so regarding carrying, lekaman beperik hazorek. In the chapter of Hazorig, which is one of the other chapters of Masechet Shabbat, by Hotza'ah Hecha Ketiva, the question is raised, right? The Gemara wants to know, where do we even learn the prohibition of carrying from? V'lo ba'e lemilfei mimishkan. And fascinatingly, despite the fact that we assume all the malachot are derived from the Mishkan, the construction of the tabernacle, there is a reluctance here to learn it from the tabernacle. Af al gav the havya b'mishkan, even though Hotza'ah took place in the construction of the Mishkan. Mishum, the malacha she'eino chashuvahi, because it's not an important mitzvah. It's a malacha, sorry. It's not a significant malacha. The ma malacha asei shehotzio merishut, because what malacha did you actually violate? What act, right? A malacha is, and we'll draw down a little more into this soon, but a malacha is fundamentally an act. What did you even do when you picked up an object and removed it from its domain? May ikra chafetz? At first it was an object. V'hashta nami chafetz, and now still it's the same object. Kach pireish rabbeinu. What the Or Zeruah is articulating here is what I would say is a general fundamental overarching belief about all the rest of the malachot. Right? So we have been talking about, we just concluded tonight, talking about the a very specific instance of the malacha of Bishul, which I don't like translating as cooking, but is often translated as cooking. A very, very specific instance of the malacha of Bishul. We've been talking about it between Mincha and Ma'ariv. And one of the first things I'd said is that the weakest definition, but to a certain extent, the simplest and most important definition of Bishul is using heat to change an object's state. Right? Most malachot change the state of an object. How do you violate Bishul with a steak? You take a raw steak and you partially cook it, and boom, it has moved from raw steak to partially cooked steak. Boom, you violated Bishul. You changed the state, right? Most malachot, right? We're not going to go through all 39, but most malachot fundamentally change in some sense the state, the object's state. Don't ask me for examples of each and every one of them because I couldn't come up with them, but the Ozarua is essentially working with that premise, and it's a fundamentally correct premise of the Melachot. However, it's just not true when it comes to Hotza'a. That's the Ozarua's problem. Me'ikra chafetz, you took the earring. V'hashtana mechafetz, it's still an earring. That's not how all the other Melachot work. You would have to crush it. You would have to melt it. You would have to, I don't know, what you can't thresh an earring. But the point is, it's all about the transformation of states. That ain't happening here. The only thing that's happening is the shifting of domains. I do want to stress, I've read sources 6, 7, and 8 as though they all agree. There is much to say about the nuances to each of their positions, but for our purpose, it need not concern us. But there is what to say about reading the Ozarua and Rashba as though they're somewhat disagreeing. We're not going to focus on that. For our purpose, what is clear is the following. Hotza'a, the prohibition of carrying, is malacha geru'a. It's weak, it's insignificant, it's lackluster. And the reason is because, unlike all the other malachot, which are object-orientated, hotza'a alone is domain-orientated. And therefore, it just doesn't fit the paradigm of all the other malachot. It doesn't work like any of the others. And therefore, it's gurua, it's lacking, it's weak, it doesn't play by the same rules. It's unique. It is a completely different malacha to the other 38. And in appreciating its uniqueness, I believe gives us the key to understanding why hotza'a of all the malachot is the reason why we don't blow shofar on Shabbat. But to appreciate exactly why, we first need to realize what the other 38 malachot are doing. Source number 9 is from the Gemara in Chagiga. The truth is, this statement is found in many, many different places across the Talmud, across Shas, but there is a fundamental principle of Shabbat, Melechet Machshevet Asra Torah, that when we think of the malachot that are forbidden in the Torah on Shabbat, they are all machshevet, they are all creative in some sense. They all involve creative endeavors. And this is obvious, the rationale is obvious, because the entire purpose of Shabbat is to cease creative acts, as we read. And indeed, we read this on Shabbat as part of our davening, but it's found originally in the Torah in Parashat Ki Tisa, Vishamru v'nei Yisrael et HaShabbat, the Jewish people shall keep Shabbat, La'asot et HaShabbat l'doratam brit olam, throughout the ages as a covenant for all time, B'ni u'v'ni b'nei Yisrael et hile olam, it shall be a sign for me and my people for all generations, Ki sheshet yamim asa Hashem et HaShemayim v'et Ha'aretz, for 6 days God created the world, U'vayom HaShvi'i, Shabbat v'yinafash, and on the 7th day, God rested. What do? On Shabbat, we emulate, and we had a whole series once where we talked about these kinds of ideas in greater detail, but we emulate God's cessation from creative activity by avoiding transgressing the melachot, the melechet machshevet, the creative endeavors. We refrain from our own creative acts in emulation of God's refraining from his own creative acts on Shabbat. All 38 of the 39 melachot unambiguously then testify to God's creation of the world. And this is, it's worth recognizing, a crucial theme also of Rosh Hashanah. Even when Rosh Hashanah coincides with Shabbat, even though we don't blow shofar, we still say this paragraph, of which we only have a little bit of it at the beginning here, which is the paragraph said usually after the shofar has been blown, Hayom harat olam, on this day the world came into being, Hayom ya'amid bamishpat, on this day God stands in judgment, kol yitzurei olamim, over all the creatures of the world. Right? The idea that Rosh Hashanah is Hayom harat olam, the day God created the world, one of the days of creation, different interpretations of what exactly it means. Right? Rosh Hashanah is about recognizing God as creator of the world. 38 of the 39 melachot also testify to God as creator of the world. Because we cannot make those creative acts upon the objects on Shabbat. The problem is that Hotza'ah is a melacha geruah. Hotza'ah is not a creative endeavor, as Ozarua explained. It's still the same chafetz, it's still the same object. Nothing has changed. You would be very, very ambitious to describe yourself as a creative because you take objects from outside to inside and back again. Like, I'm creative. I just walked outside holding my phone yesterday. That doesn't make you creative, right? Hotzah is not one of the creative malachot. It does not fit in with this theme testifying to God's creation of the world, but it does testify to a fundamentally different theme. Two of the sources that we had looked at already on the first shir is the notion of what actually the shofar stands for. When we do blow shofar, like we will on Sunday, what is the purpose? And one of the core sources I drew your attention to is the following. First, Parashat Balak, Bilam's blessing, Lo hibit aved b'Yaakov, no harm is in sight for Yaakov, v'lo ra'a amal b'Yisrael, no woe in view for the Jewish people, Hashem Elokav imo, God is with them, utruat melech bo, and their king's teruah is in their midst. We know teruah is some sort of horn blast, though we looked at other interpretations on the first week. What exactly does this mean? So we saw in Sefer Amos, right, when Amos is prophesying doom, gloom, and destruction for Moab, he says, what will happen? Umet b'sha'on Moab, Moab shall die in tumult, b'trua b'kol shofar. With the trua, the shouting, the blare of horns. The shofar of Rosh Hashanah symbolizes God's malchut. It symbolizes God's kingship in the most powerful yet terrifying way. He rules all. His say is absolute. His decisions, the only ones that matter. That is true of a regular Rosh Hashanah. But I came across an absolutely incredible idea by Rabbi Tzvi Sobolovsky, one of the Rosh Yeshiva at YU, who points to another aspect of our Judaism that testifies to God's malchut. Spoiler alert, it's Hotzah. Rav Sobolovsky points to, of all things, a verse from Parashat Miketz, the Joseph story. Yosef is taken from prison, appointed second in command by Paro, and Paro gives him a whole speech of all the power he has. Over all the control Yosef will have, second in command, he is not the absolute ruler, that's Paro, but he's the next best thing. And amidst Paro's description of all the power Yosef will wield, he says the following. Vayoma Paro el Yosef, ani Faro, I am Paro, uvil adecha, lo yarim ish et yadov et raglo b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. Yet without you, no one shall lift up hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. Obviously, it is figurative, right? This is a familiar phrase even in English. But what it speaks to is the idea that an absolute ruler, an all-powerful ruler can forbid, can prohibit, can prescribe even the most insignificant acts, should he so desire, because that is his absolute power. Yosef had the power to prevent people, figuratively, but perhaps loosely, literally, to even lift even the most effortless of things, their own hands and feet. And says Rav Sobolovsky, this is the exact principle behind the Malacha of Hotzar. It's Malacha Gerua, it's weak, it's lackluster. It doesn't involve anything creative. It doesn't involve any objects, because that's not its point. Hotza'a, more than anything else, prohibits the effortless. As we saw, right, Rashba said, I can stop the Soshi at this point already, there's a little bit more to say. As Rashba pointed out, you can schlep a couch across the room, and you've not violated Hotza'a. But take a pin outside your house, God says no, you have violated the will of God. There is nothing else that so clearly and obviously declares his absolute power and control over the Jewish people than his ability to prohibit insignificant acts, which are simply, at the end of the day, people moving from one space to another. It's domain shifting. Domain shifting is effortless, it's normal, it's natural. Carrying light, effortless objects is totally insignificant, and yet the fact that God wields power even over those testifies not to his creation of the world, but to his absolute malchut. We can't even carry a key in our pockets if there is no Erev, because God says so. Lo yarim ish et yadov et ragla. No one can lift even a hand or foot without the say-so of the Ribono Shel Olam, without God. When Chazal decreed that you don't blow shofar on Shabbat, they were grasping, they were recognizing the fact that shofar is one expression of God's kingship, his malchut. Right? It's the truah, it's the powerful, terrifying blast announcing his presence. But there is another indication of God's absolute malchut, perhaps in some ways an even stronger articulation of his malchut, and that is the malacha of Hotzar, our inability to do the effortless, the unexciting, the uncreative. But the simple act of moving tiny light objects from domain to domain is the ultimate declaration of God's malchut. And so, when Rabbah decreed no shofar on Shabbat, he was fearful that people's obsession, or obsession is the wrong word, but people's desire to fulfill one expression of God's malchut would accidentally violate an even clearer expression of God's malchut, of God's absolute kingship. It's absolutely effortless to carry a shofar to someone else's house, you know, via a Rashut Harabim, but to do so is to violate and to dismiss the idea that God is the absolute ruler of all. And to do so on Rosh Hashanah is to absolutely miss the point. And for this reason, the Malacha of Hotza'ah, of all things, in the most ridiculous of ways, this malacha gerua, this lackluster malacha that doesn't match the paradigm of any of the other malachot, that doesn't work to the same principles of any of the other malachot, overrides the Torah obligation to blow shofar on Shabbat. Because Hotza'a is the ultimate example of God's malchut. Now, obviously, this Rosh Hashanah, thank God, we live in an era of, right, we don't have to actually be too sensitive to the prohibition of carrying on Shabbat. The truth is, it's really, really fascinating. I went down the rabbit hole of the Chabad position on a Erevin. And at first I found what I thought was a simple perspective, and then I learned there is great debate among the Chabad community, but there is at least one school of thought within the Chabad world that one of the objections the seventh Rebbe had to a Ruvin was that it would desensitize people to the observance of Shabbat. That if you can walk around effortlessly carrying objects, it desensitizes you just to the simple principles of Shabbat. And while we do build a Ruvin, right? Rav Herschel Schechter, one of the most prominent Rosh Yeshiv Rav YU, is fond of quoting, among others, the position of the great medieval commentator Rabbeinu Asher the Rosh, that you are obligated to build a Ruvin, right? We build a Ruvin and we build them enthusiastically. But there is something to the fact that by not having any consideration for the malacha of Hutza'a on a typical Shabbat, we are completely desensitized to the notion of God's malchut, his absolute kingship, that is expressed. And so when Rosh Hashanah occurs on Shabbat, we actually get a reminder of that power. We, even though we live in an Erev, even though there's no, it is physically impossible, basically, for you to violate Shabbat through carrying the shofar, at least, you know, in the BIEV community, we still allow the malacha of Hotza'a to conquer shofar, to deny us the Torah obligation of shofar, because Hotza'a is the ultimate expression of God's kingship. It is the ultimate declaration that God is the ruler over even the most minimal of our acts. And in doing so, this coming Shabbat, when we're sat on Rosh Hashanah and we are anticipating, we turn to the pages in the Machzor, usually of shofar blowing, and we see at the top on Shabbat, skip to page yada yada, and we skip to page yada yada. At that very moment, we are reminded in the most crucial way of God's absolute kingship and control over us in denying our ability to even do the most effortless of tasks in order to declare his absolute kingship upon us, the fundamental core theme of Rosh Hashanah.